Good morning. You are listening to People Rise Up on your non-commercial community radio station, KBOO, 90.7 FM here in Portland, Oregon, USA. My name is Andrew Geller, and today I am intending on talking all about radio frequency identification chips, and in greater detail, once my guest calls in. She will be Catherine Albrecht, author of the award-winning Spy Chips, How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. And when she calls, we'll be talking about advances in the implementation of radio frequency identification chips at the consumer retail level, being the primary way in which most of us would encounter them, although there are many additional uses beyond sort of inventory and product pricing and tracking. There's applications in the medical field. There's applications in transportation. There's applications in terms of identification documents and other sort of official paperwork sorts of things. Catherine Albrecht is the founder and director of Caspian, Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering, which was formed in 1999. She's written several books and produced videos on the issue. And she is to be featured in a film, America, From Freedom to Fascism, which is going to be screened sometime this month, maybe it's already happened, at the Cannes Film Festival in France. And again, she is author of Spy Chips, or co-author of Spy Chips, and that book won the Lysander Spooner Award for the Best Book on Liberty in 2005. So, for those of you who are not familiar with radio frequency identification, RFID hereafter, it is a data capture technology which uses tiny tracking chips that are typically attached to an antenna, although much more advanced technologies have the antenna built in, but that's primarily the U.S. military that's using that sort of technology. Pretty much, there's a data chip and an antenna. There's two primary types of RFID chips, and those are passive and active chips. Passive chips basically contain some data that typically what is done is you have a long string of characters, and that string corresponds to proprietary or private information in some way that's accessible in a secure database. So typically, the RFID chip wouldn't necessarily contain specific information about what it is attached to, but more refers back to a database and operates in that way. And as a passive chip, it has no ability to actually transmit on its own. It is not powered. It is activated by a remote reader, and this can be something that's like a little handheld device. It can be, not quite so much at close distance like that, but it has to be triggered from the outside. Active chips do have their own power, and they are able to actually, they can be sort of automated to relay information on a set time frame, every 24 hours, every hour. It can be a constant back and forth. And those are much less common at this point. The last time that I did a program about radio frequency identification chips, it was before Catherine had released her book, Spy Chips. I believe we did some radio about 18 months or so back, sometime in 2004. And at that point, there were folks tracking this were sort of awaiting a large-scale rollout in 2005 of radio frequency identification chips, primarily driven by the Pentagon, which was actually going to be implementing a requirement that its inventory, basically anyone doing business on a large, I guess maybe it was a large scale. I know with Walmart, it was their top 100 suppliers only initially. All inventory would need to be RFID'd. I have read some about efforts along those lines, and hopefully Catherine will be given a call in at some point, and she can give us a full-scale update, because there is a whole lot of stuff happening. RFID chips may already be in products you are purchasing. There is no requirement anywhere in the United States that radio frequency identification chips be labeled or that the product be labeled as containing such a chip. There are over 100 companies that sponsored and have sponsored in the past research efforts, sort of industry-wide research efforts in collaboration with universities, including large global businesses such as Gillette, Procter & Gamble, Unilever, as I mentioned already, Walmart is a key driver in this, Target stores, Kraft, which is, as we all know, owned by what used to be called Philip Morris, now called Altria, IBM, and even the U.S. Postal Service is really in favor of pushing this new technology. We'll get into that just in a little bit here. So how do you find if an RFID chip is on something you've purchased? Basically, you just kind of need to seek it out. Typically, at this point, they are not as secretive and hidden in the products as folks ultimately would like to be able to, although these things are tiny, possibly like the size of a grain of rice, maybe a little bit bigger, probably not a whole lot smaller at this point, although in the labs, I believe it's Hitachi has created an RFID chip that I believe was, I didn't print this out, I think it was about an eighth of an inch square and like about a millimeter thin, maybe less than a millimeter thin, so pretty darn small. There is more information about everything that I've discussed and will be discussing at Catherine Albrecht's website, which is www.spychips.com. Now, they have a release out here. This is another company that's actually testing RFID. This is Levi Strauss. This is a press release from April 27th of this year, which notes that Levi Strauss & Company has admitted that it is testing RFID technology in its jeans in an undisclosed location somewhere in the United States. And they refuse to discuss, they refuse to discuss any specifics about the test, according to Jeffrey Beckman, director of worldwide and U.S. communications for Levi Strauss. He did confirm that the company is testing, a retail customer is testing RFID at one location in the U.S. on a few of our larger volume core men's Levi's jeans styles. And by retail customer, I imagine that they mean a retailer, someplace you would actually purchase the jeans. Again, unclear exactly which brands, but you could probably guess. Dockers are being tested at two locations in Mexico, and it's a fair guess that that would be included among what is it they say, larger volume core men's Levi's jeans styles. Maybe they mean denim specifically. It's hard to say. You might think twice, though, about purchasing some brand new Levi's here in the U.S. at this point, unless you really go over them and don't find some sort of RFID device. There is a way to destroy RFID devices, and you can find that information at spychips.com. Running a magnet over RFID chips does nothing. They are not magnetically encoded, so a magnet does nothing. The information that I found on how to disable RFID chips pretty much centers around severing the wires connecting the chip to the antenna. You know, this is sort of small-scale kind of stuff, small scissors, a straight pin, and some other small-scale ideas in terms of puncturing, rupturing, or otherwise crushing the RFID chips can be found at spychips.com. Now, as I mentioned, several corporations, several large-scale corporations are very interested in this technology. The government, at both the federal and state level, although not necessarily every state, are also very interested in this. There is, let's see, okay, well, here's, all right, now we'll go to the corporations first. So this here is actually, I'm going to read a couple of short excerpts and do a little bit of paraphrasing here from the first chapter out of Spy Chips. The first chapter is available online if you want to read it. You can follow links again from spychips.com. And there's also a link to the foreword in the book by a man named Bruce Sterling. And it, too, is quite interesting and informative. And I lost the reference for who exactly Bruce Sterling is, but you can find that if you go to spychips.com and follow the links to the book. You're listening to People Rise Up on KBOO here in Portland, Oregon. We're talking about radio frequency identification chips, and I believe that I have now lost all hope that I will be hearing from Catherine Albrecht, which is unfortunate because she is considered to be among the leading world experts on radio frequency identification chips over what she's learned in the past several years. Okay, so tracking everything everywhere, the RFID threat. Imagine a world of no more privacy, where your every purchase is monitored and recorded in a database, and your every belonging is numbered. Where someone many states away, perhaps in another country, has a record of everything you have ever bought, of everything you have ever owned. Every item of clothing in your closet, every pair of shoes, everything in your desk and medicine cabinet. What's more, these items can all be tracked remotely. And once every possession you own is recorded in this database and can be tracked, you can also be tracked and monitored in real time, remotely, through the things that you wear, carry, and interact with every day. We may be standing on the brink of that terrifying world if global corporations and government agencies have their way. It's the world that Walmart, Target, Gillette, Procter & Gamble, Kraft, IBM, and even the United States Postal Service want to usher in the next 10 years. It's the world of radio frequency identification. In a world, in a future world laced with RFID spy chips, cards in your wallet could, quote, squeal on you as you enter a store, a retail outlet, shopping for groceries, announcing your presence and potential value to the business. Reader devices hidden in doors, walls, displays, and floors could electronically frisk the RFID chips in your clothes and other items on your person to determine your age, sex, preference, and financial value to the business, potential financial value to the business. That's from chapter one of Spy Chips. Some of the things that are already being chipped, where people may interact with them on a daily basis, include work uniforms, employee badges, some schools, and it doesn't say at what grade level, don't know if this is elementary, high school, not sure that it even matters. Some schools are requiring students to wear spy-chipped identification badges so school administrators and teachers can track where students are day-to-day. Retailers could provide customer-specific pricing for items based on your previous purchasing patterns as well as information in your bank account. RFID chips could be embedded in passbooks and ATM cards. Let's see. Obviously, critics of RFID technology are very concerned about the potential for infringement, further infringement upon civil liberties here in the United States. The technology could provide government officials, including law enforcement, the ability to electronically frisk citizens without their knowledge. And invisible checkpoints on roads and sidewalks can be used to monitor movement. Now, RFID proponents claim that they would never want to do something like that. But as the text here reads, it is possible to prove that not only are they considering doing this, it has already been done. The United States government already controls people with RFID-laced bracelets and not just criminals. Now they're planning to embed spy chips in U.S. passports so citizens can be tracked as they move about airport terminals and across international borders. Does your car have an RFID chip in it? It's entirely possible. Maybe you've even purchased one to go, well, I guess we don't have toll roads out here, but if you're listening in a different part of the country where you do have toll roads and you have one of those little devices that you can just kind of zip on through the toll gate, that's RFID. The Federal Highway Administration is actually joining forces with states and vehicle manufacturers to promote so-called intelligent vehicles that can be monitored and tracked through built-in RFID devices. Your car tires could have RFID chips in them, as could your shoes. And RFID is, it is possible to pair RFID technology with satellite-based global positioning systems, and therefore you can literally, or any item, could literally be pinpointed anywhere on the globe in real time. The Postal Service would like to be able to embed every postage stamp with an RFID chip that can enable point-to-point tracking. The European Union has been in discussions for a little while about putting RFID chips in Euro banknotes. Potentially that could have begun last year. I haven't seen confirmation of it, but it is possible. IBM has a patent application, or in its patent application, IBM is looking at technology to, quote, identify and track persons using RFID tagged items. And along the lines of, let me flip back here someplace. There was a reference to International Paper and its efforts to be able to facilitate RFID chips into paper, both envelopes and like packaging, like cardboard, corrugated cardboard packaging. And I don't see the immediate reference to it, so I'm not going to be able to provide more information on that. Again, this is all out of the first chapter of Spy Chips. I came across an article yesterday from RFIDjournal.com. And if you just do a search online with your favorite search engine, you can find a whole lot of resources about RFID. Let's see. This is, I don't know the source on this article originally, but it's reprinted from RFID Journal. MacArthur Village, a 612-unit condominium complex in Southern California, is moving from a manual gate entrance system to an RFID-based automatic vehicle identification system. The complex hopes that this will alleviate abuses of parking privileges and improve security at the facility. Let's see. Under the new system, each condominium unit will be issued two 2.45 megahertz active RFID tags. And so now remember, the active tag actually can transmit its own signal. It does not need to be triggered by something else. Active tags typically have a much longer range of operation compared to passive tags, potentially even several miles, but more typically several hundred meters. Passive tags, I believe the operational range is typically several centimeters, so a few inches, up to, I think it was about 7 meters or 20 or so feet. Typically at a shorter range than longer there. Now when a resident arrives at the gate, an interrogator mounted at the entrance reads the tag attached to the windshield, passes its number to MacArthur's access control system. The system checks the number against the database of residents, automatically lifting the gate as long as it finds the tag ID on a list of permissible entrants. If the ID number is not in the database, the gate will not open. And so I'll just depart from the article there. That seems like it could be all kinds of creating all kinds of difficult situations, possibly for guests. I like the idea of manual stuff that you don't rely on a machine to let you in and out of where you live. There are many different countries that are also putting RFID chips into passports. The United States initially rejected the idea, but in fact now, as of October 2006, well, let's see, in November of 2005, the State Department said that as of October 2006, all new U.S. passports will contain RFID chips with some security features. Now, I don't know if the security features they're referencing there refers to it being secure, because this information is potentially easily hackable. And if you were curious about hacking RFID chips, I'd say do a keyword search for that concept. It's fairly easy to do. I read a couple of articles about people who basically stole the ability to enter buildings with literally nothing more than passing a few inches away from the person having the RFID chip on them. And that was all kinds of fascinating. It looks like Pakistan, Norway, Malaysia, New Zealand, and France have also now begun issuing passports with RFID chips in them. So again, the technology appears to be moving forward, although opposition to it is continuing and growing. It'll be very interesting to see whether or not this ultimately comes to pass. Again, time frame of about 10 years. The next 10 years is when these businesses and governments would like to have this stuff really widely implemented. And the strategy that they're taking, and I wish Catherine had been able to get to us this morning to talk more about this, basically the strategy that's being taken is going for the kids, getting the kids used to the idea so that as the older generations depart this plane, people will just be familiar with it and not trying so much to change the opinion of older folks who may be more resistant to such new technologies. The People Rise Up website has been improved to the point that all content has been temporarily erased. We regret this issue, and we are doing what is possible to get the content back up there. If you go to archive.org and search for my name, in the open source audio section, you will find a list of programs available at archive.org. If you have any comments or questions about anything you've heard this or any other week on this program, you can send email to me, kboo@riseup.net. And again, the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm will hopefully shortly have a bunch of links related to the content of this program. Thank you very much for listening this morning. Coming up next, I'll actually be continuing on here on the board. I'll be interviewing Dr. Azam Alwash, director of the Eden Again Project, which is working to restore the marshlands of southern Iraq and Iran. Jay Thiemeyer will have a review of the work of Portland's Aurora Chorus, a group of powerful women singing for peace. That'll be towards the top of the hour. And then at 11, on Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman will feature a comparison of the current National Security Agency spy scandal with Project Shamrock, the NSA spy scandal uncovered over 30 years ago by the Church Committee, and a controversy about a new documentary film regarding emergency rooms in U.S. in an emergency room of a U.S. military hospital in Iraq. Stay tuned for that.